This is Commons Cast, the official podcast of the Martha Rivers Ingram Commons at Vanderbilt University, featuring Q&A with the Dean, the Commons Calendar, and a first-year resident interviewing various humans of the Commons. Now, here's Q&A with Dean Melissa Grisolfi.
Hey, Commodores, welcome back to the Commons Cast. This is Anissa Patel, and today we're back with another episode of Q&A with the Dean. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Dean's Dinners and more specifically how you can get more involved and maybe even some of your opinions on, you know, favorite Dean's Dinners and just kind of how the idea came to be and some of your most favorite memories.
Okay. That's a lot of things.
Yeah, I know. But just laid it all out there.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, that Dean's Dinners are a tradition from the beginning of the Commons. So it's not something I made up.
Okay.
So the Commons opened in 2008, and I am the third Dean of the Commons. So the first Dean of the Commons is named Frank Weislow. And then he was the Dean, I don't actually know the specific years, but after he was Dean, the next Dean was Vanessa Beasley. And Vanessa Beasley became actually the Vice Provost of Academic Affairs, ultimately. Okay. So, and now she's the President of Trinity University. So she's not at Vanderbilt anymore. But she was the Dean who hired me. And so I've been the Dean since 2019. But the Dean's Dinners have been happening the whole time.
Okay.
And they actually come about because of an endowed fund. Someone said, you know what I want is I really want intentional time for students to engage with faculty. And they didn't say it had to be a Dean's Dinner, but that was like, we're giving you money to make sure that really happens. And so we use those funds for the Dean's Dinners. And it is the best part of my job, I have
really?
To say.
Really? You think so?
It's my favorite thing. Sometimes actually lots of nights right before the Dean's Dinners, I'm kind of tired.
Right.
I haven't seen my kids all day, uh-huh. and you know, I've had a long day, and I think, oh my gosh, what I really don't want to do right now is have dinner with 20 people. But every single time at the end of the dinner, I come upstairs and say, that was so great. Because once you're there, you know, sometimes you're tired, but once you're there with all the energy of the people who are gathered, like, it's wonderful. Yeah. They can be all kinds of things, the Dean's Dinners. So the stated purpose is to connect students and faculty. That's
right.
it. That's right. my only constraint. There are so many amazing faculty on campus that it's not very hard to think about, you know, who to invite. But I do think a little bit differently about themes and goals in the fall and the spring, for example.
Okay.
So in the fall, the thing that's most important to me in the fall is for new first year students to start to see Vanderbilt as a place where they belong. And, sometimes the most visible parts of Vanderbilt culture, aren't welcoming to everyone. And so, I try to make sure that we have faculty from, all the different disciplines or from different identity centers. I always have a dinner with, the Casey Potter Center. So, cause a lot of the time students don't even know at first that we have an LGBTQI, you know, center,
mm-hmm.
Or I'll have, student groups that I know are like, you know, really important to students on campus, but maybe not as visible. And that changes every year who that might be. So in the fall, there's a real emphasis on that. And then just with the sprinkling of people who I know are amazing with students or that students would really love to get to know. So I try to invite faculty from what I know are some of the most popular majors.
Right.
Or sometimes somebody just has something amazing happening. Like, you know, he doesn't know this is going to happen. But so there's a professor at Blair, Deshaun Burton, who just got a Grammy this week.
I saw that. Yeah, that's insane.
So like, I should really invite him for
exactly,
a Dean's Dinner. Because
exactly.
don't we all want to know about a Grammy?
The Grammys,
right? And so... So sometimes it's something neat like that. In the spring, I do a little more focused on majors. So I have, like, I had a dinner with the Career Center. I had a dinner with the Health Professions Advising Office. I know students are really starting to think a little bit more about their majors or summer internships. But then in March, I always do a series of dinners around Women's History Month. In February, we try to do at least one dinner around Black History Month. Yeah, so that's actually February 7th is the Dean's Dinner for Black History Month. And then in March, actually, I have a series, spring break, so we lose a Dean's Dinner week. But I have a series. It's Women in Law, Women in Business, and Women in Engineering.
Okay.
And that will be faculty.
That's nice.
Yeah, from each of those places. But then, you know, it's just also like somebody who I think would inspire students.
Do you find that students are more willing? Because I've never been to a Dean's Dinner, but I can imagine it's a bit intimidating to go to the Dean's House with this, you know, esteemed professor. Do you find that students are a bit reserved, or do you think that they're pretty willing to open up? And if not, do you have any advice or any words that you wish you could, you know, tell them before coming to a Dean's Dinner? Maybe would you wish they would prepare more questions or something, just along the lines of that?
Yeah, I think people are really intimidated about coming to the Dean's House. And I will tell you that once people have come to one Dean's Dinner, they almost always come to another. And so as an indication, it's actually not scary at all.
Right.
Like people tend to really enjoy them. And so I think the thing I wish the most is that people would just sign up for one. Because, I mean, we do have lots of people sign up. There's usually a huge wait list. But I don't have 1,600 people sign up, you know? And so I don't know if you remember, because so much happened the first couple of weeks of classes, but right at the beginning of the semester, we have these cookie parties for every house in the backyard.
Yeah.
So part of the reason we do that is because I do find that once people meet me, they're not intimidated anymore, right? I'm not actually a very intimidating person. And especially like if you're eating a cookie in the backyard, you've then been to the dean's residence, right? It's sort of like the theory is anyway, that at least that initial barrier is removed. I mean, I do think that's true. We have way better participation in Dean's Dinner since we started doing those cookie parties.
Interesting.
There could be other factors too, But there are still people who I think are intimidated. I have to say that once people show up, everyone does a great job. There's no way to participate. So some people have lots of questions and they ask questions, and other people are just excited to listen to the conversation. And those are all wonderful ways to participate. Everyone does have to introduce themselves. We go around the table, and so everyone has to say their names and where they grew up, and then there's usually some question that's relevant to the dinner. But I think it's a pretty low bar for participation. And so, I mean, it's always really fun, and the guests are pretty amazing, and the food is always amazing.
And looking ahead to, obviously we're still in February, but looking ahead to next year, are there any changes you wish to implement, or any kind of progress for the program, or are you kind of satisfied with the way that it is right now?
Well, I always wish that more people signed up, for sure. I mean, more different people. I love that people come back. Sometimes the way I get to know people really well is through Dean's Dinners, honestly, because you just talk to people differently around a dinner table. But I don't know. It is so I am constantly wondering if I am bringing in the people that students, you know,
are
want to hear. Yeah. So I would always love when students share their opinions. This year, for the first time, and I'm embarrassed that it's the first time, We're trying to have more of the coaches to dinner. I've never had, so Coach Lee is coming at the beginning, who's the, you know, the football coach at the beginning of the, or at the end of the month. And then I'm hoping that Coach Ralph, who's the, you know, the coach of women's basketball, will come in April after the season. But I'm kind of, so this year when I realized I've never had any of the coaches over to dinner, that's, why
haven't you thought of that?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it is because I know they're so intensely busy.
True.
But they're not the same level of busy all the time, right? The in season is different from out of season. So I think, honestly, part of what made me realize is that I should be doing more of this is that Vanderbilt's trying to build a volleyball program.
I saw that. They have some new commits, I saw.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so their new coaching staff has been, like, really proactive in reaching out to all kinds of people. And so I've gotten to meet and talk to them a lot. And that was when I realized, like, oh, this is weird that I don't do this more often, that I don't talk to more coaches more often. And so, yes, that has launched the new initiative.
That's nice. Yeah, and I think it's interesting because you kind of think, a coach, why would they want to get to know other students that are not part of their team, if that makes sense? But I think that these coaches, they have a lot of wisdom to add in terms of, like, the community, Vanderbilt community. And especially if you maybe don't play that sport, but play another sport, I think you can learn a lot about what coaches are looking for in an athlete or in a player through talking to one that you're maybe not as close to, mm-hmm. because then they could speak kind of candidly and not worry about the personalization of that.
Yeah.
So I would love to talk to some of the coaches. I think there's a lot of aspects of athletics that's not just being a player. And so you can learn a lot from talking to these people that have been in the industry for a long, long time.
Well, and I do think the coaches, some of our coaches actually are Vanderbilt alums themselves in the coaching staff. But then also, you know, the coaches do care a lot about, like, participation and school spirit, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, of course, their players are going to be their top priority. But I really think a lot of the coaches care a lot about the Vanderbilt community. And it's a great way to get to meet students.
And no better feeling than a big student section coming to support your game, especially like women's basketball, a team that, you know, has clearly been on the rise and is doing an amazing job this season. And I think, you know, there's obviously a lot more news and momentum around that, but there could always be more. And I think that is just by getting to know more people, especially the coach and the players as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's all for today. I'm Anissa Patel, and keep listening to hear about what's coming up this week on the Commons calendar. We'll see you next time on our Q&A with the Dean.
Hey, y'all. It's Sophia with the Commons calendar. I'm covering events from the 21st to the 27th. Up first, today, the 21st, from 10 to 3, VSG will be hosting a blood drive in Community Event Space 2304B. They're looking to help people suffering from sickle cell blood disease. Also today is Sister, You've Been On My Mind, a mental health check for Black women. This is from 4 to 5 in the Black Cultural Center Auditorium. Today is also the day of the Spanish and Portuguese Film Festival, starting at 5 in Furman Hall 114. On Thursday, LGBTQI Life is hosting a drop-in pride training in Commons 233 from 9 to 12. Participants will receive a safe space placard. Also on Thursday, the data science minor will be hosting an info session in Commons 235 from 4:30 to 5:30. Chick-fil-A will be provided. If that interests you, you might also be interested in the Women in Government's our workshop in Buttrick 201 starting at 6, also on Thursday the 22nd. CSW and the Student Care Network will be hosting Friday yoga at 3 p.m. in the meditation room in the Center for Student Wellbeing. From 12 to 2 on Saturday the 24th, Robinson College and the Vanderbilt School of Medicine will be hosting the Robinson Escape Room at Extreme Escape Games. Currently, there will be two rooms with 6 people each, so if there's great interest, that may be expanded. If you're interested, be sure to register. The Muslim Student Association will be hosting horseback riding on Saturday starting at 12. If you're interested, RSVP and meet on the Branscombe Quad. The Ethiopian Eritrean Student Association will be hosting a screening of Bob Marley, One Love, on Sunday the 25th at 12:30. There are limited spots, so RSVP soon. The Blair School of Music will be hosting a performance of jazz combos on Sunday starting at 8. On Monday, the Center for Student Wellbeing will be hosting Meditation Monday. That starts at 1:15 in the Student for Center Wellbeing Meditation Room. The Res Colleges will have a panel on professionalism and identity on Tuesday starting at 12:15, ending at 1:15. It's being hosted in the Rothschild Great Room, and catering is Velvet Taco. The Students for Justice in Palestine and the General Action for Planned Parenthood is co-hosting a talk on the reproductive health and rights of women in Gaza from 6 to 7 in Buttrick 102 on the 27th. So if that interests you, I would definitely recommend attending. That's all I've got this week, and thank you all so much for listening. See you next week.
Hi, my name is Bree Woods, and I'm your host of Human of the Commons. And today I have Fee, who is a first year, joining me.
Hello, it's nice to be here.
Hi, so first, what's your major? What house do you live in?
My major is music composition, and I live in Stambaugh House.
Perfect. Okay, so first and foremost, Okay, first I'll start with more, I guess, questions that have to do with being a composition major and just your interest in composition. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, what genre / style / category of music do you enjoy composing most?
I love that question. I really am passionate, at least lately, about taking the music that I love to listen to, which is primarily jazz, and taking concepts from jazz, so harmony and sounds and instruments, and injecting that into what you would consider, I guess, classical music. So I write a lot of music for instrument ensembles, but with harmonies that kind of reference things that you would hear in free jazz and bebop jazz, which are all kind of these big, more contemporary jazz genres that kind of are global. So I think those are big. And then I also really, really like to write music based on poetry because I'm like a very big poetry consumer. So a lot of my pieces will be like derived from titles of other people's poems or from verses and lines in other people's poems. And I use that kind of as an inspiration process.
Wow. So you would totally say that your interests in music and composing and writing kind of go hand in hand in your creative process.
Yeah, definitely. The way I got into writing music was via songwriting. So I think that's kind of a way to articulate the fact that everything I write and read and everything that I musically write and listen to all connects. And it did connect when I started songwriting because that's text and music. So it's like, I think that's a good example of how all of my interests intersect.
Cool. And also, a little side note, speaking of songwriting and lyrics, I know you're big in the genius.com world. Do you want to talk about transcription and how you began and like what you still love about it?
Yes, I would love to. When I was in high school, I was very into this genre of music within the Vocaloid world, which is the Japanese synthesizer voice bots. And a big part of the fandom within that was lyrical analysis, because everyone would be translating and transcribing the lyrics and kind of delve into what they meant. And so I used to spend hours watching YouTube videos, just analyzing the lyrics and taking notes just because I wanted to. And so then as I got older and kind of fell away from that, I wanted to keep writing about lyrics, and I've always loved songwriting, so I really care about good songwriting skills. So I signed up to be a contributor on geniuslyrics.com, which basically means if any new song comes out and I'm aware of it before someone else is, that's part of the community, I listen to it, I write down all the lyrics that they say, and if they have other uploads on different platforms of the lyrics, I'll find those from different corners of the internet, and then we'll like have conversations about what everything means. And it's just a fun way to, I feel like, appreciate the art form of lyrical writing as well as the music itself.
That is so neat. I've never met a genius contributor in person, and now I'm proud to say I'm like basically one degree away from all of the artists who like go on the Genius YouTube
this is like true
channel and talk about their lyrics.
This is true. A musician on Genius once edited a contribution I made, and I felt very cool even though they don't even know who I am, but still.
That's so cool. This is gonna sound so cliche, but I think it's so interesting all of the ways that music can connect people knowingly and unknowingly.
Definitely. Because, like, I feel like most people, when I've told them I work, like, in my free time on Genius Lyrics, they're confused because they don't know that the process of getting the lyrics on there is literally done by volunteers all over the world who just choose to. So it's kind of cool to, like, have that community aspect.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like Wikipedia entry.
Yes. Oh my God, totally. It's like also the Tumblr for music, basically.
That's so real. Yeah. All it's missing is like pictures with the like hashtag like aesthetic. Or
yes. No, yes. Because there's even like, they're not used as much because they're older, but there are like chat forums built into the Genius website for people that contribute, which is kind of funny. That's so it makes sick. It feel kind of like a time capsule.
Oh, for sure. Speaking of different enclaves / communities that have to do with music, I kind of want to talk about being a Blair student because I think that the Blair School of Music is such an interesting, like, interesting community on campus. Mm. And I feel like there's such a vibrant culture of community. And so I wanted to know, like, has your relationship to music in general or composing evolved or changed since experiencing a semester at everything that is like the Blair School of Music?
I think 100%, because being in an institution of music in comparison to where I'm from, which is a very rural town where there's no music scene at all, is huge, because now I'm in an environment where I'm constantly surrounded by people who are equally as passionate about music as I am. So there's that aspect of constant inspiration from others, and there's that aspect of not competition, but everybody's working hard, which makes you want to work hard as well. And then also, I think there's something so just fulfilling and exciting about writing music and being able to go say, hey, friend, acquaintance, whatever, I know you play this instrument. I know you sing in this register. Do you want to work together and create something, and you can perform this piece that I spent some time writing? And it's just a really great way, I feel like, to be able to share passion, which I think it's great to have a passion, to be passionate about something, to care about something. But when you can express that with other people who are equally as excited about it, I feel like there's nothing better. Like even just having a conversation about, oh, this new track just dropped, or this new composer is starting to put out a new concerto. Like it's feels so good to be able to just talk and nerd out about that sort of stuff. So I feel like Blair gives you that community to have conversations about music you don't really get to have anywhere else.
Mm, cool. That's such an interesting little like bite of insight.
Yeah.
Talking about interests overlapping and being able to talk about like the multitudes of your passion that have to do with music and writing. Mm. I know that you are serious about like writing personally, and you also write for a certain publication on campus. Do you want to talk a little bit about those different types of writing and maybe how, well, you kind of already touched on how that can contribute to your creative process when it comes to music, but I kind of just want to hear about what you do and your publication, if you want to talk.
Yeah. So personally, I have been writing poetry for a long time. I started writing poetry in elementary school, and that's kind of where all my creative pursuits go. But I also led a creative writing club in high school and was like very involved in like community organizing. So I did a lot of speech writing and stuff. And so then when I came here, I really wanted to be able to continue writing. And I'd always been interested in something related to journalism. And so I found out about an organization called The Amp, which is a music publication. It's very new, very, very new, and we're kind of building it up from the ground. But it's a journal where we write about music, and that's like the pivotal way of bringing my love for writing text and writing about music and talking about music into one thing. And then also recently this semester, I applied to The Slant, which is the Vanderbilt satire publication. Love it to death, so funny. And I feel like I am a consumer of comedy. I don't know if I can say that I'm funny, but
definitely are.
Thank you. That's flattering. But I really like satire and I like comedy, and I've always been a big, like ever since I was little, I always said that at one point in my life, I want to do a stand-up routine. And so getting onto The Slant, and I haven't been able to publish something yet because I'm very new, but getting to understand how that writing process works, and I'm working on my first article right now, is so cool because it's not connected to music in any way, but it's working the part of my brain that is creative, that is generating new ideas, new ways to phrase things in a way that is going to make people laugh and make people think. And so I think those might not connect directly to music, but definitely connects to just my love for writing and creative content in general.
Wow. Oh, The This is so cool.
Thank you.
I love human of the commons. You kind of hinted at speech writing and being active in your community back in your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a little, like, maybe a minute or not a minute, that's really long, but a little bit about that? I kind of want to hear, I'm interested in that.
Yeah. Back home, I was involved in a lot of community and student organizations centered around queer advocacy. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of work in the community on like organizational development and professional development, and also just like equity speeches. And so one of the main contributions I made to the orgs I was part of is I would give a lot of the speeches to schools and businesses and the Maine Principals Association, which is like the state school principals, whatever, that sort of thing. And I would spend a lot of time trying to figure out a way that you can write in a way that people will listen, not feel talked down to, but also learn from your perspective. And so I feel like that has made me so much of a better person and a better communicator and a better writer, because it's one thing to write something that people will read, and it's another thing to write something that people will listen to and take in and apply to their life. So I feel like that was a big part of my life in high school. And after I'm more adjusted to living at Vanderbilt, I really want to get back into participating in my community here in that way.
Totally. Wow. I also feel like that could make you more empathetic. Like you said, just a better mm-hmm. person. I totally understand, like, figuring out not your audience, because you're not just talking to the people, but mm-hmm. Almost like your colleagues and your peers mm-hmm. to some extent. But kind of moving back into the music lane, because I have some fun questions that I want to ask.
Yes.
First, are you a Letterboxd user?
Oh, yes, avid. Yes,
do you know in the interviews that they do on the red carpet where they like ask celebrities on the spot, what are your four favorite movies?
Yes.
I want to know, who are four composers, producers, or like musically identified like people that inspire you?
Okay, four on the spot. I would say one, probably initially, no. Let me start over.
No, you're so fine.
So many people are rushing through my head. One, Stravinsky. Recent development, his music really inspires everything I write, and that's a new discovery that I can kind of relate to that. Two, Elliot Smith. Elliot Smith is the biggest inspiration in my life, and everyone that I know knows this. He is such a good songwriter. He is such, I adore him. Three, Joe Hisaishi. He's a composer, and he writes most of, if not all, the music now for the Studio Ghibli films. Mm. And he's the reason I'm here, basically. He does not know that, but just hearing his music and films made me realize I want to go to school for music, because that's something I care about and I want to do. And then four, probably Park Ji-ha. She's a Korean composer that combines like classical Korean instruments with contemporary compositional styles, and I just really think it's so cool the way that new composers bring in aspects of music from the past into the present and create this like really cool fusion work. So I think those are my four.
Whew. Wow, that you honestly showed up ready. I would have gone blank in the
head. No, because I'm not ready. I have like 20 more people in my head, so I had to condense it down.
We'll just have to start our own show talking about music or something, and then we can just
yes.
talk about it all day. But we've reached the end of our time,
mm-hmm.
and I've reached the end of most of my questions, but mm-hmm. I think I could keep interviewing you for 10 billion hours, because you're so interesting.
Oh, thank you.
But thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. I love to just yap and ramble about music at all times.
Well, I'm glad that we could get you in front of a mic to do so.
Yes.
Well, I think that's all. Thanks so much for listening.
CommonsCast is produced by My Commons Life, a division of student media at Vanderbilt, in cooperation with the Office of the Dean of the Ingram Commons. Subscribe to CommonsCast at Apple Podcasts or via your favorite podcast app.